The gospel reading for this morning from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 3, picking up at verse 13, listen for God's word. Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" But Jesus answered him, "Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." And then he consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." Friends, this indeed is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The update from the Gaventa house, as it is here as well, is that Christmas has finally gone back into storage. As of yesterday, all the ornaments are back in their boxes and all the creche sets are wrapped up back in their newspapers from 2007. And all of it is back in a series of plastic tubs lining the wall of the garage. Some of it packs up pretty easily, of course, like the stockings that you just roll into a ball and use as padding. But some of it is a bit more complicated, and nothing in our Christmas collection poses a greater packing challenge than the beautifully crafted German Christmas pyramid that we inherited from Sarah's parents. You may know this genre, but if you don't, the German Christmas pyramid is like a series of small carousels stacked on top of one another, all carved out of extremely light balsa wood, flanked with a ring of candles, and then topped with a series of lightweight fans. Sarah grew up with these. Her parents taught on American bases in Germany, and so part of her childhood inherited this German tradition. This moment when the family gathers around and lights the candles and the heat moves the air enough to push the fans and spin the carousel, which often has Christmas characters on them of one sort or another, and the whole thing sort of dances to life. And when it works, it's magical. But as you can imagine, anything that involves a combination of lightweight balsa wood and open flames and moving parts has a lot of vulnerabilities to it, and ours breaks all the time. Every year we take it out of storage and we have to do a sort of medical assessment on it. Sometimes the injuries are trivial. The first year we were here, the Texas summer just melted all of the accompanying candles, and we learned how not to store those parts in the garage. But some of the injuries are more substantial. There are hairline cracks in the wood. There are some mechanisms that don't quite turn anymore the way they're supposed to turn. Even in the years when this thing finally works, it's a few seconds of magic following hours of major surgery. At this point, every once in a while, I begin to wonder whether our Christmas pyramid actually has too much personality to be useful anymore. And I will admit that before we inherited this particular one, I had heard Sarah talk about them. And so in a moment of sentimentality early in our marriage, for Christmas, I got her one, a brand new one. It was right off a factory line somewhere. We still have that one, and it works just fine. It sort of pops up and goes, no problem whatsoever. It doesn't have any of the bumps or any of the fractures. Also doesn't have any of the story. It kind of turns out we don't really want the new one. We just want the old one to work. If I could, I would take it to the repair shop. Not just any repair shop. This very specific repair shop isn't actually a real shop. It's my newest comfort television. Now on Netflix, a few years after debuting in the UK, The Repair Shop may be the least exciting television show I have ever seen, and I love it so much. BBC has just rented out a beautiful old country barn somewhere and filled it with experts in repairs and restorations. Carpenters and upholsterers and experts in gears and mechanisms and folks who can disappear the tear in your canvas painting or reassemble the antique vase that cracked on the floor. This is literally the entire show. People bring in their heirlooms, like the old clock that fell off the shelf, or an old antique chair in disrepair, or a teddy bear from before the war that lost a fight to a German shepherd. You bring it in and somebody fixes it. There is no suspense. They will take that clock apart to its barest components, each antique gear hand cleaned and hand scoured. They will take that teddy bear and rebuild it. It's missing an ear, but we can take some fabric from here and a stitch from there, and for a second, the whole thing is laid out like an autopsy, and the next thing, it's resurrected. I'm in love with watching these things come back to life. But it's not just the mechanics of it, it's the stories. Natalie Cummings is an older woman who walks into the repair shop with a violin case. And the story inside is priceless. Her aunt Rosa was a prominent violinist in Germany in the 1930s and played with the Berlin Philharmonic. Unfortunately for her, Rosa was also Jewish in the wrong time and at the wrong place. And she was ultimately arrested and sent to Auschwitz, violin case in hand. In the camp, the violin was life. Rosa was recruited into the small orchestra of prisoners who, at the behest of the guards, would play soothing music to lull new arrivals into a false sense of security. Rosa survived the camps in no small part because of that violin, though she did not long outlast the war. And so the violin went to Natalie's father, who played it recreationally for decades before his death nearly 40 years ago. So by the time Natalie walks into the repair shop, the violin itself is in tatters. Not only is the neck effectively disconnected from the instrument, but around its edges you can see the effects of the camps, crude patches made over gashes in the wood, almost like the entire thing had spent years held together with string and scotch tape. And Natalie's hope is, of course, to give the violin new life. It reminds me a bit of our hope this day when we tell the story of the baptism of Jesus, which is, like all baptism stories, a story about new life. Of course, in this Epiphany season, Jesus is at the very beginning of his ministry. Matthew's gospel skips from the flight in Egypt decades later to find John running around in the wilderness and Jesus just ready to get his work started. This is the story that begins the story, a story of a new calling, of a new chapter, of a life ready to be lived, which is, of course, why Jesus sets out to be baptized, to have this moment recognized, to have his new life begun. Such is always the story with baptism, everything shiny and new. You may even remember, one of the ways we tell this story is by taking a moment to remember our own baptism. If you were baptized as an infant, this can be a challenge. But if you were baptized as an adult, you can do this. You can remember the moment. You can call back on the water as it came over your head and recollect that sense of new beginnings and new invitations and new and new and new. But I am sympathetic with John the Baptist, for whom baptism is very old work and who would nonetheless very much like to be baptized. Jesus comes to John in the river, and Matthew says that John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" Jesus doesn't oblige him, of course. There's no time. Jesus needs to get his ministry started, and he is checking boxes. But I am still sympathetic with John, who has been in this business a long time already and still hungers for new life. John has been living in the wilderness already. John has been waiting in the Jordan already. John has been surviving on locusts and wild honey, and as you well know, there is nothing shiny or new about John the Baptist. Nor, of course, for him, is there anything shiny or new about baptism. John has been baptizing people up and down the Jordan for longer than the gospel writer can count. We have no way of giving a number to it, but we know that crowds were streaming out of Jerusalem into his presence. He has done this a lot, which means that a baptism that might seem shining and new to us is not shining and new when your name is John the Baptist. But still, John the Baptist wants to be baptized. Of course he does. Been doing his work for a long time. Of course he wants new life. Just maybe he gets it. Of course, Matthew doesn't record John himself getting baptized, but maybe he still gets new life. After all, his hands get to hold the water that inaugurates the ministry of Jesus Christ. And of course, what Jesus is doing in Matthew's gospel is a new thing. Jesus is bringing a new covenant. Jesus is ushering a new creation. Jesus is beginning a new chapter in the life of all creation. Nobody would have been surprised if Jesus showed up to this new thing looking for a new baptism with new hands carrying new waters. But that's not what Jesus wants. Jesus wants the old waters. The Jordan River that has run through Israel's story since the beginning. Jesus wants the old hands, the hands of this wayfaring prophet, hands that have slept on the desert floor, hands coated with the dirt of the muddy riverbank, hands worn with the traces of the water that they have held time and time and time again. It turns out that this isn't just a story about new beginnings and new creations. It's a story about restorations of old hands put to new use. It's a story about reclamations of an old hand called again into God's purposes. It's a story about redemptions of old life made new in the waters of grace. So this violin comes into the repair shop, war-torn and falling apart. Of course, I know absolutely zero about instrument repair, but the thing looks like it's in pieces, and I cannot help, with the same energy that once bought a factory-purposed Christmas pyramid, I cannot help but think that maybe it's time for the owners of this violin to find a new one. But of course, the whole point is that this one has a story. When the repair shop opens up the instrument, you can see the signature of the man who made it alongside fingerprints of those who loved it through the darkest days of the war. And the technician decides quite easily that this story is too beautiful to ignore. It's the wood that is charred by despair and the joints that are torn by Holocaust they're too much of a part of the instrument. And so instead of pulling any of it out, just puts in some very light reinforcements. A few gentle supports, a little tender patching, some fresh glue, a good cleaning. The neck, of course, is reattached, the strings replaced. But the old body of the instrument, the old heart of the instrument, the old soul of the instrument, it gets loved as it is. It gets loved with care and with attention, with grace. It It gets to be a story about restoration and reclamation. A story about redemption where nothing gets thrown away and where anything and anyone can be repaired. So as we gather around the waters once again, this is the gospel for today, that this baptism is not just for the young and the shiny. It is also, especially today, it is also for the old hands with so much life left to live. Welcome to the repair shop. Here in these waters, every story is sacred. Here in these waters, every wound matters. Here in these waters, every bump along the way of your story is part of your story, is part of who you are, is part of who God calls you to be in these waters. Here in these waters, nobody gets thrown away. Here in these waters, everyone can be redeemed. Here in these waters, everyone can be repaired. Here in these waters, we are forgiven, healed, and made whole. Come, thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace like an instrument beaten down by the shadow of death. But the song that violin plays now, I wish I could play it for you, but I think you already know what it sounds like. The music of all creation. Thanks be to God. Amen.